Man of Steel has returned to the big screen, but where are the new movie ideas? The last Superman reboot was Superman Returns, which came out just 7 years ago. Between rehashes of books and comics, when has Hollywood given us some original stories that have worked, both artistically and as box office successes? I'm Russ Simmons, and today on Central Standard, we'll take a look at what's hot and what's not at your local Cineplex. Plus, we'll take your calls about your favorite movies that celebrate originality. Let us know about the unique and creative movies that you think have blown the dust off the Hollywood mold. Join me and my fellow film critics on Central Standard, coming up right after this hour's news. Morning, Kansas City, and welcome to Central Standard this Friday. My name is Russ Simmons, and I'm with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM. And since I'm sitting here in the host seat, that means it's movie day here on Central Standard. And we'll be talking about movies that have opened up over the last month or so, what's hot and what's not at your local Cineplex. But also, we wanted to get your perspective on why it's so hard sometimes for Hollywood to give us original ideas. When was the last time you saw a movie that was original and really worked both artistically and as a box office success? So we'll be taking your calls at 816-235-2888. You can also contact us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Just let us know what you think. We're looking forward to hearing your perspectives. And I'm joined today on the panel by...
This is Loie Lockerbie. I freelance for the Kansas City Star, kcactive.com, and I have a blog at suchacritic.com.
And Tom Poe. I'm film professor at UMKC.
And a little bit later on today, we'll be speaking with Justin Scott, who's the marketing director for Standee's Theater, the new restaurant and theater that opened up in Prairie Village just about a month ago. And he'll be giving us the perspective on the difficulties with original programming, why these theaters choose to book the movies that they do. So we'll be getting his perspective in the second half of the show. And of course, we want to hear from you as well. But in getting off on this topic of originality, well, obviously, the big box office hit right now is not particularly original. It's Man of Steel, the latest in the saga of Superman. Tom?
Well, before I went to Man of Steel, I thought I ought to check out what it was about. So I went to the film's website, and this is what it said about the story. A young boy learns he has extraordinary powers and is not of this earth. So he comes to discover what he was sent here to do. I thought maybe it was about Jesus. But it turns out it was not a bird or a plane, that indeed the Man of Steel is Superman. However, this is not your father or grandfather's Superman. This is the reboot directed by Jack Snyder, who did Dawn of the Dead and 300, and kind of produced and written in part by Christopher Nolan, who, of course, also rebooted Batman. And in the Christopher Nolan tradition, this reboot takes what was once considered sort of pop culture, comic book fare, and turns it into truly biblical myth. So I think it was appropriate to start off kind of making that sarcastic remark about this being Jesus, because I think that, in fact, in Nolan's mind, that this is contemporary mythology. And so it's a much darker Superman. And I think people's responses are going to be very much attuned to whether they have great positive feelings about the original sort of Superman movies with Christopher Reeves, which were really light and a great deal of pop culture fun, or this contemporary dark retelling and restarting of the story. The good news about this film is that Superman is now played by Henry Cavill, and he is the Man of Steel, and particularly pecs of steel and abs of steel. I really think he's a brilliant choice. I was really impressed. He doesn't have much to say because the script isn't interested very much in having anyone have much to say. But you know what I like about his performance? He is an actor that even when he isn't saying something, you can see him acting. And it kind of, I think, helps really sort of humanize what is otherwise a typical summer blockbuster CG effect film that is just exploding all over the place in a way that drove me kind of crazy. So I'm not sure. I have such mixed feelings about this reboot. Mm-hmm. But I'm hoping, I don't think this will happen, but I'm hoping as time goes on that Henry Cavill will be allowed, in fact, to show us what I think his reconceptualization of not a nerdy Clark Kent. I mean, this Clark Kent could sign up for Magic Mike or be a Chippendales dancer. But the way that he is very somber and hesitant works really well. So what should I do? 2.5 stars?
2.5 out of 5?
Maybe.
Okay. And Lily? I didn't see that one. Oh, sorry about that. Well, you know, I felt that in some ways, very much as you did, that it was a mixed bag. I wanted so much to like it. And there are a lot of things that were very good about it. I agree with you that Henry Cavill is quite good in the role. He's not given a lot, as you mentioned. But at the same time, he brings an intensity to the part. He's extremely well cast. And I thought the rest of the cast was good, too, particularly Kevin Costner, who brought a touching aspect to the movie that I didn't expect.
Diane Lane, I thought, was really mm-hmm. good as Kent's mother. And there's a scene when he's a little boy. The whole Kansas backstory I really liked in the film.
And I like the way that it was structured as well. Instead of going in a linear fashion, you got some flashbacks to his youth to kind of understand a little bit about the struggles that Superman was going through. There are big departures from the Superman myth that I think are really bothering a lot of the fanboys out there who, you know, he completely is doing some things that Superman would never do. And yes, I agree that that's bothersome. But the main problem with the film, from my perspective, is that it was too loud, it was too long, and all of those action fight sequences became numbing. There was a certain point where you just didn't care anymore about what happened. So I felt that I was rooting for it. It has some really wonderful moments, but when you look, factor in all of the flaws, I can only give it a 3. So,
you know what, though, Russ? Because you reminded me of those sequences of Superman's youth in Kansas, mm-hmm. I'll move up to a 3.
Okay.
Because I really did like that part of the film.
We'll agree that it's a 3 out of 5 for Man of Steel. And you know what? That was a $225 million movie. That's not counting the marketing costs. So it's going to go a long ways to make its money back. I think ultimately it will with overseas and with all the product placement. Did you know, notice all that product placement that was in Superman or in Man of Steel? Yeah, pretty blatant. But at the same time, I think it will. I hope it does well enough to merit a sequel because it set up some interesting ideas for the future. So that's Man of Steel, rated PG-13, and we're giving it a 3 out of 5 stars. But the topic today is originality or lack thereof. But let's celebrate some films that are original. And I think we can celebrate one today, if I'm not mistaken. There's one that opens today called The East. Or no, excuse me, opened on June 14th. It's called The East. Loy?
Yeah, this is a very good example of what you can do with an original story. And I think it's telling that this is a relatively low-budget film that a big studio did not have to take huge risks on, which kind of explains why they don't do a lot of original stories. I apologize in advance for not even wanting to try to pronounce the director's name.
Right.
But more people will recognize Britt Marling, who she had a supporting role in Arbitrage as Richard Gere and Susan Sarandon's daughter. She did a terrific low-budget film called Another Earth a few years ago, and she co-wrote, co-produced, and stars in The East as a young woman who works for a private company that contracts with big corporations to try to stop these eco-activist groups who are dipping over into very dangerous, possibly terroristic activities to try to bring to light the corruption and pollution and lies that some of these corporations are telling. She goes undercover and infiltrates one of these groups and begins to somewhat sympathize with them, but not in that very sort of cliched way that you get a lot with these undercover movies where she starts identifying and turning against her employers. The ambivalence holds all the way through the story. She begins to see these activists as human beings. She begins to see their point, because these companies they're going after are doing some really terrible things. But she's also very concerned about what they're doing. And she has a loyalty to her bosses. So it's this constant walking a razor's edge through the whole movie that is quite fascinating. And Marling does a great job in the lead role, and it's just an interesting script. It really is thought-provoking, and the only thing that fell apart for me was over the closing credits, there's a montage that I don't know why. Why they didn't just fade to black after the last scene. This montage is awful. I highly recommend closing your eyes or leaving before it starts. But it really almost undermines the whole movie, which just I don't understand the point of it at all. Because up until that point, it's, you know, really quite an interesting and thoughtful drama. So I'm going to give it 4.
Tom?
I like this film very, very much. Oh, and not only for Britt Marling, but Peter Skarsgård plays this...
Alexander Skarsgård.
Yes. And in fact, he's kind of have a cult leader type of quality. And Ellen Page is in it, and I think she's terrific too. And I always love Patricia Clarkson. She always has minor roles, but just shines. I just find, as Loy was saying, it's taut. It's an intelligent narrative. I think it's beautifully shot and great acting. So what more can you ask for? So I sure am giving it 4 stars.
Yeah, I liked it as well. Perhaps not quite as much as you did. I think that there were some pacing problems with the film, and also there were some extraneous and repetitious elements. But at the same time, this is I love to celebrate originality, which is what we're talking about today. And so I got to give it a lot of props for that. So I'll give it a 3.5. But since you two gave it a 4, I think we can even it out to a 4 for The East, rated PG-13. At least it's smart and it has a topic that I think will resonate with a lot of people out there. And that's, again, Britt Marling, a name really to continue to watch. She's not only a terrific actress, but a good producer and screenwriter as well. What was the name of her first film that there was the sci-fi?
Another Earth.
Another Earth,
yeah,
correct.
Which
thanks.
Is really remarkable.
One kind of is worth seeking out on DVD
yes,
as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, again, we're talking about originality. What original stories have worked for you and paid off at the box office? Give us a call at 816-235-2888, or you can send us a note at centralstandard@kcur.org. You can also reply on our Facebook page or send us a carrier pigeon or whatever, but go ahead and join in the conversation. We want to hear from you. So let's talk about another movie that I think probably celebrates originality a little bit, and that's a movie called Stories We Tell, and which I understand, Tom, I have not seen this one yet, but if you carry the ball, it'd be great, kind of plays a little bit with the documentary format.
Absolutely. I think this is a terrific film, and it's one that's hard to talk about because you don't want to give away its mysteries and the ways in which it's playing with our head. It's a genre-twisting autobiographical documentary by Sarah Polley, who is the Academy nominated writer-director for Away From Her, that great film with Julie Christie. Here she's a filmmaker who sets out to investigate the secrets that have been kept by a particular family made up of folks who are big storytellers, and it turns out that that family is her own family. So she playfully interviews and interrogates, in fact, her own family members, and discovers that, in fact, their memories of their upbringing and life together constantly sort of vary and are kind of unreliable. And so she elicits really refreshingly candid but often contradictory answers to the same questions she asks everyone. I can relate to that, as I think most human beings can do, because when my sister and I get together and we start talking about our childhood, and I'll bring up something and she'll say, that didn't happen that way at all. Here's the great original thing about this film, and what makes it tricky is that, in fact, what the filmmaker is ingeniously doing is interrogating, in fact, how all of us create a story of our life. And it ends up being our memories, but our memories, really, we become the director of like a personal screenplay. And we probably all create a screenplay that has an unreliable narrator. So I don't think I should say anything more because there's tricks and things that you discover. But it's ingenious, and I think a terrific film totally unique and unusual, pretty much. So I'm going to give it 4 stars and hope you'll go see it.
4 stars for Stories We Tell, rated PG-13. Let's back up to a movie that opened on May 31st, and I'm not sure where this stands on the originality scale. I'm going to leave that up to Loie and Tom, but it's called Now You See Me, rated PG-13.
I actually found it fairly original. It's about magicians, the big performance-style magicians, who are committing robberies in the course of their act. And it's a group of 4 of them, played by Dave Franco, who is James Franco's brother, Isla Fisher, Woody Harrelson, and, I just blanked out on it. That's terrible. Jesse Eisenberg, duh. And there are a couple of older gentlemen, Morgan Freeman and Michael Caine, who are kind of, they're in the background. Maybe they're pulling strings, maybe they're not. Mark Ruffalo and Melanie Laurent are a couple of agents who are investigating these people and trying to catch up with them when they're always a step ahead, at least. What's interesting about it is that it takes this idea of sleight of hand and misdirection and plays with it in the movie format. So you're always trying to keep up, too, and you're always trying to catch up. And it points toward a very interesting ending, too, I got to say. it's very clever. It may not be the best. It's probably got huge plot holes that I wasn't really thinking about while I was watching it. It reminded me of sort of a pop version of The Prestige, in the way that it has this central mystery and people constantly messing with each other and using sleight of hand and misdirection to accomplish their personal goals. But it's a very enjoyable film, and I found myself being intrigued by it and liking the originality of it. So I'll give it 3.
I'm not going to be quite as kind as Chloe. I think this is an example. I agree with her that it's very original. But that original isn't always such a good thing. It's got a terrific cast, and so that's why I enjoyed watching the movie. And I don't think they can be blamed at all for the problems. I just always enjoy watching Jesse Eisenberg being Jesse Eisenberg. And Woody Harrelson is just at a peak these days, I think, in his career. I think the bad news is that, in fact, it's directed by the guy that, in fact, did The Transporter and Clash of the Titans. So he has a hard time, in fact, holding back on Razzle Dazzle and letting, in fact, these terrific actors who are intriguing characters. I think the first 20 minutes of the film, before it goes into so much sort of CGI sort of special effects, is really intriguing. But then, for me, it just kind of got preposterous, and it got sillier and sillier, and then I started losing sort of interest in making any of this sort of make sense to me. The theme of the film, and Jesse Eisenberg's character is constantly saying that, the first rule of magic, the closer you look, the less you see, and I felt that sort of way as a film critic, that sort of the closer you look at this film, sort of the less sense it makes and the less you see out of it. So I'm going to say 2.5.
So that was a 3 from Loie and a 2.5 from Tom. Is that about right? 3 from you?
Yeah.
Loie? Okay. So let's...
2.75.
There you go.
Oh, you can make it 3.
Can I make it 3
for you? Yeah, because of the cast. Tom. I really enjoyed the cast.
Okay. For the cast, we'll give that one a 3. That's Now You See Me, rated PG-13. Well, that was the beginning, and this is the end. Tom, there's a movie that came out on the 12th, which stars a lot of, contemporary comedians playing themselves in Now You See, or excuse me, This Is the End, rated R, and boy, does it earn that R rating.
This could be the end of the sort of bad boy genre. There always comes to be a film which just takes a genre to a point of no return. This is my guilty pleasure of the year. I'm going to be so ashamed to rave about how terrific I thought this film was. This Is the End is an obscene-laced comedy based on the Bible's Book of Revelation and its depiction of the rapture. So 6 young Hollywood celebrities, as Russ said, who are all playing themselves, and it's Seth Rogen and James Franco and Jay Butcherell and Jonah Hill, all totally familiar to the audience that loves this type of super bad movie. They're all playing themselves, though hopefully, perhaps some wildly exaggerated versions of at least their kind of reputations. And they come to be trapped in James Franco's house, where he's been having a party, by a series of strange and catastrophic events. It's going to turn out that it is indeed the biblical rapture. And surprise to no one, they have not been among the chosen that have been taken up into heaven. So they are having to wait out of the last days. And what is so hysterically funny is that they really don't change hardly at all. It's all ego. It's all one-upmanship. So it really ends up being wildly funny. In fact, I tell you, at times I laughed so much that I was beginning to get a bellyache. And I love the cameos of other famous young Hollywood celebs that I won't give anything away because that's so much a part of the fun. You know, to me, every generation has its cult favorite comedy, from Airport to Animal House. I'm going to go out on a limb and predict that this is going to become one of those kind of classic cult comedies. Indeed, it probably does announce sort of the end of the cycle, maybe, of super bad teen comedies, because I don't know how you go over this. And the end sort of seems to be announcing that in some ways, which I, again, can't say very much about. I think found it totally surprising all the way through. So I'm going to give it, because I think it's going to really last, I'm going to go as high as...
Oh, here it is. Drum roll, please.
No. 4.5.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
I don't know that it's that good, but I think it's going to have that type of long-lasting.
Better than The East?
Oh.
No, no. I think that that very high score really is kind of a historical prediction.
Oh.
I think this is going to be one of those films.
It's not a rating.
That for a generation, they're just going to make their own.
You know, I wish I could go there with you, Tom. I'm sorry I can't. As a matter of fact, when I was thinking about the title, This Is the End, I kept thinking, I wish it would, because I felt that this was just too much, and I didn't think that many of the jokes landed. Of course, maybe it's a generational thing, I don't know, but you know, this is a weird, dark, very, very tasteless, and very goofy comedy. You know, it allows Rogan and his showbiz friends to do something which I do admire, and that's self-parody. They're really, you know, taking it upon themselves and allowing themselves to be the butt of the joke, which is kind of fun. And while it does have some inspired moments, you know, it celebrates the stoner lifestyle, and it has just too many jokes that I felt fell flat. And however, I will admit that in the audience that I was at, they were howling when I was rolling my eyes. So perhaps I'm in the minority on this one, but I'm only going to be able to give This Is the End like a 2.5. So we'll average it out to a 3 between the two of us, Tom.
Very good.
For This Is the End, rated R.
Maybe I was responding because I have a theology school education.
Well, you know, on the theme of originality, there is an original idea that has taken to the big screen and has landed with a big thud, and that is Will Smith's sci-fi epic called After Earth. And he's a superstar, and he can usually open a movie, but this one has not worked out for him. He takes a second billing to his son Jaden. It's a big budget sci-fi opus, and you know, he's got a lot of charisma, and so does his son, and there's no denying it. But that charisma is really put to the test this time out. They play father and son astronauts who survive a crash landing on Earth 1,000 years after humanity was forced to evacuate from our home planet. And Will Smith conceived the story, and it's been adapted to the big screen by M. Night Shyamalan of Sixth Sense fame, who's known for his twist endings and other gimmicks. The visuals are impressive, and I think the Smiths, as I said, their personal appeal is undeniable, but for all the razzle dazzle, it just seems generic and routine, and it's entertaining to a degree, but I thought the memory of After Earth would start to fade soon after viewing, so I'm only going to be able to give it a 2.5 for After Earth, which is rated PG-13. A surprising box office hit is one called The Purge. Tom, you caught that one, right?
I did catch this one. This is a cautionary political thriller that follows a family led by Dad, played by Ethan Hawke, over the course of a single night to see how far they will end up going to protect themselves from a vicious sort of outside world. Here's the political allegory. It's the near future, And what's Clara Lay sort of representing, the Tea Party faction of the political cycle, has in fact taken over and gotten everything that they want. 1% unemployment and next to no crime. But that's been accomplished by in fact leaving one 12-hour period a year that is called the purge, in which everyone gets to purge all of their pent-up anger. And that anger is generally white male anger of the rich going sort of out and being able to kill anyone that is sort of poor, homeless, particularly of a racial different group. While they, in fact, live in their super security-laden houses. Now, in the end, and I think this is the one downfall of the film, it turns into a pretty typical home invasion movie where everyone just goes up and down narrow halls and scary things jump out at you in the middle of the night. But what's good about the film is that I think that the acting is, for this type of just exploitation film, really quite good. Ethan Hawke quits himself quite nicely, as do all the members of the family. And I do think that it is in that tradition of Night of the Living Dead or Straw Dogs, where there were political themes, but they're not that important, so I'm going to give it 2.5.
And I'm going to give it a 2. You know, it's really a celebration of violence, in my mind, masquerading as a social commentary. But it earns its R rating again. That's The Purge. And we're going to be talking about movies that celebrate originality, and we want you to give us a call. What's paid off for you on the big screen? Join us by calling 816-235-2888 or send us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. And we're also reading your tweets at KCURCST. We're going to take a short break and come back with a few announcements, and then we'll be joined by Justin Scott right after this. And welcome back to Central Standard this Friday. I'm Russ Simmons, and it's Movie Critic Day here on the show, joined by Lori Lockerbie and Tom Poe, and we're going over movies that have opened up over the last few weeks here in Kansas City, some doing well, some not doing so well. But we're celebrating originality, and we would like to know from you what stories have worked and paid off on the big screen. What did you find highly original? That's what we want to find out. Give us a call, 816-235-2888. Or send us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org or tweet us at CST, excuse me, that's KCURCST, and that's where you can let us know what you think about original programming in the movies. Now, I have a few quick announcements, and I want to let everyone know that you can find out information on all of these at KCUR.org. The Gather Independent Film Series is continuing at the Glenwood Arts, and this Thursday, the 27th at 7:30 p.m., they'll be showcasing an independent film called Broken for one show only, and part of the proceeds will benefit the Kansas International Film Festival, which comes up this October 4th through the 10th. And Tim Roth stars in this drama about 11-year-old diabetic girl whose innocence begins to vanish when she's drawn into the troubles of her neighbors. It's based on a popular novel by Daniel Clay. And once again, that's Broken. And the UMKC Department of Film's Summer Musical Series continues at the Tivoli with Funny Girl on June 25th, Swing Time on July 2nd, the classic Astaire Rogers movie. And on July 9th, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Again, that's at the Tivoli. And the Kansas City Public Library's Off the Wall film series features Kansas City native Paul Rudd in Our Idiot Brother, a comedy about a lovable slacker. And that's Friday, June 21st at 8:45 at the Downtown Central Library. And again, you can find out information on all of these at KCUR.org. And also, you can find out information on a big event taking place currently at the Tivoli. Tom, you going to carry the ball on that?
I will, though before I grab that ball, we'll just say on the Summer Musical Series, I'm going to be hosting that and introducing the film. So
excellent.
Come in and say hello. But the news here is that last night was the opening night of the Out Here Now Kansas City Gay and Lesbian LGBT Film Festival, and it's going to run for the next full week. There's going to be something like 20 films that are going to be premiering. I'm fortunate enough to always look forward and participate in this particular film festival, which has become one of the largest and most successful in all of the Kansas City sort of local film festivals, which I'm happy to say. Being, in fact, out here now as a proud sort of member of that community. So I've been able to see a lot of pre-screeners, which I don't have time to talk about. Tonight, I Am Divine, which is a documentary on Divine with John Waters, and all of his sort of cast is really terrific. In fact, also, there's a film called GBF, Gay Best Friend, by the maker of Jawbreaker. And real quickly, because you just need to go to the website and pick and choose. But on Saturday at 7 p.m., there's a film called Cloudburst, which is just a terrific independent film that stars Olympia Dukakis and Brenda Fricker, both Academy Award winning actresses, as an aging lesbian couple that, in fact, try to make it to Canada to get married before one of them ends up dying. And it's a beautiful, wonderful film. I wish I could go on and on, but I don't have time. Just recommend it. In fact, the director, Jamie Rich, last night at the opening said, when you get on the air, make sure you say, straight people are welcome and will enjoy it.
That's good to know.
One last sort of note. It's because of ties together, the UMKC musical series and the film fest. It's probably no accident that we're showing Babs and Funny Girl in the same week as the LGBT film festival. So
some synergy there, huh?
Some synergy.
Yeah, okay. Once again, we're talking about originality. What do you think is original? What has worked for you? You can contact us at 816-235-2888. But I'm going to bring in Justin Scott, who is a local marketing director for Standees, the theater that recently opened out in Prairie Village. It's a theater complex as well as restaurant. But we wanted to get some feedback on what the exhibitors are going through to try to figure out what programming is going to work and why perhaps they don't take chances on original material. We know why the studios have cold feet, because I just gave you the example of After Earth, huge, big budget original story, even had a superstar in the lead, and the film did not do well. They want to go back and they want to rely on formula, sequel, what they know will work. So when you, as a exhibitor, have to make that decision of what you're going to show, what goes through your mind?
Well, first, thanks for having me, Ross.
Sure.
I appreciate the invitation to be on. This is a timely topic, this originality versus sequels, retreads, and the same old movies from Hollywood. We've been talking about it at Standees for a while now. We've been open almost a month. And just to give you some context, Standees is a 3-auditorium theater in Prairie Village, but we're really a restaurant first and foremost. It's an upscale casual restaurant that also has 3 85-seat auditoriums. So given that context of what do exhibitors play or what do we look to play, we have a programming strategy that out of the gate, we want to play first-run commercial movies that appeal to adults. We are a 40-plus target market for adults who want to go to a movie and enjoy cerebral content. Now, we also will play the best in independent and limited release films. We'll also play some genre-crossing titles that kind of straddle independent feel but are more commercial in budget and cast. Now You See Me would be an example. This is our second week of showing Now You See Me, which kind of fits that category. It's an original plot, as we discussed, but it has a blockbuster cast and a budget behind it. We'll also show some progressive theater experiences like live and pre-recorded concerts and Metropolitan Opera, things like that, that will also appeal to adults. So what does all that mean, given that context? What are we going to play at Standees? There's a fine line between art and commerce, especially when you're running a business. So if you take that strategy and look at when we opened on Memorial Day weekend, we played The English Teacher, Julianne Moore, The Great Gatsby, and Mud. Now, those are 3 examples of what I would say, what I just discussed. Great Gatsby being more of a first-run commercial movie, Mud being a kind of genre crossover, feels independent, but stars Matthew McConaughey. And then The English Teacher, which really is a smaller independent film.
Weren't you the only theater outside of New York to show that?
Indeed, we were. We were the only theater here in the Kansas City area, or from outside of New York, showing that movie. Now, we could have opened with The Hangover 3. We could have opened with Fast and Furious 6. And we could have opened with Star Trek. All retreads, reboots, sequels, call it what you may. And that is the rub between originality and commerce. We have to keep the doors open. We need to pay our rent. We need to pay our staff. So we really look closely at data to drive our business decisions. And it's interesting when you look at the box office. We use some data from Box Office Analysts, which is a local Kansas City company that provides analytical information to exhibitors. And when you look at the box office, almost half of all movies released in 2012 grossed less than $200,000. So that's 55% of all titles in 2012 grossed less than $200,000. Conversely, 7% of the titles released in 2012 made more than $75 million, which accounted for 60% of the total box office in 2012. So you can kind of compare that as a juxtaposition to the 99% and the 1%ers. It's a small amount of titles making a lot of money on the commerce side. But on the art side, there are a lot of really good original stories that may not make a lot of money that people want to see. So at Standees, we've been open 28 days. We are trying to figure out that blend. And our strategy is to always balance between having maybe one commercial first-run movie, like we're playing Man of Steel right now, but then maybe showing an English teacher down the hall in another auditorium. And then maybe that middle auditorium is I call it the genre crossing, a Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, maybe. Again, titles that would appeal toward adults.
Yeah, you know, I was looking at some statistics, and back in 1981, of the top 10 box office hits, 7 of them were original. Of the top 10 films in 2011, there were 0 original films in the top 10. They were all either sequels or adaptations of previously done material. The only original story in the top 15 films in 2011 was the number 14 film, Bridesmaids. Everything else is rehash. And, you know, I guess, as Justin says, it goes back. You have to strike a balance, obviously, but what can you do to encourage an original story or original film when you know that the odds are against you? I mean, what does one do? How can we as a movie-going audience encourage these original ideas? What happens? What do we do?
Well, now you're getting into the marketing behind these titles, because a lot of the smaller independent films do not have the big marketing budgets that the studio movies have. Mm-hmm. So there's less word of mouth, less demand. You know how that translates to in the box office? If nobody's coming to see your movie, it's not going to play at theaters, because theaters have to pay their rent and make money to stay open and keep the doors open. So when you look at a movie like Frances Ha, great original story, great independent film, for 1 week in Kansas City, it grossed $945 at one theater. Juxtapose that with Man of Steel. That same week in Kansas City, it made almost $1 million, just over $1 million, on 24 screens for a total of $42,825 per location versus $945 for Frances Ha. Great original story. But $945 cannot compete with a $42,000 location gross.
You know, as I mentioned, we were talking a little bit earlier about a recent public speech that Steven Spielberg and George Lucas were giving, and it was about their predicting kind of an implosion in the cinema world, whereas Steven Spielberg is predicting in the not-too-distant future that the movie theaters will only be for the big events. The ticket prices will be $50. You'll hit the big blockbuster. And every other kind of film will have to be distributed in a different way. Do you think that's a realistic viewpoint?
I think it is. You know, the management team at Standees, myself included, we all came from AMC. So we're used to working with studios over the years. And it's harder and harder over the last 5 years with the economy to invest and find investors for a big budget film. It's harder to market, produce, and distribute that movie. There's a lot of inherent risk that goes along with that. So when you look at the studios, why would you take a risk on an original title that may not play well when you know you're going to make X amount of gross on Iron Man 3, 4, 5, and however far it goes, right. Or Fast and Furious 7, 8, 9.
Right. By the way, we got an email from Mac who says, I'm not sure if The Purge is actually original. It reminded me of the short story The Lottery. I can kind of see the similarities with that.
Well,
with Shirley
Jackson.
But
it's not actually an adaptation. That's, I think, the criteria. I mean, if you really want to get into it, are there any original stories?
Right. Mm. What original stories have worked and paid off? That's what we want to know from you. What's one that you loved or hated? And the number, once again, is 816-235-2888. And Pam called that number from Overland Park. Welcome aboard, Pam.
Hi. Thanks for the show. And I just wanted to say that I saw The Stories We Tell, thought it, the editing was incredible. And I think that that's any film lover is going to love watching that film and watching how she goes back and forth and how she uses what you think is old footage but isn't.
Pam, do you find yourself attracted to original stories and unusual programming, or do you want to know what you're getting before you get there?
No. I want to take the risk. I love films, and I also love it when somebody surprises me. And I thought that that was just a huge surprise and wonderful surprise. And I love the indies. I think that there's a wonderful community here that supports them. I've noticed the audience growing. Been really surprised when I go to the fine arts and finding more people there. And I think people are just into taking that risk. And also, as an older audience member, that they're starting to realize that we do like to go to the movies and we do have some money to spend on them. And so I've noticed that growing quite a bit. And the kids can do the Superman.
Is that a title that appeals to you at all?
What?
Superman, the Man of Steel.
Oh, yeah. I love heroes. I'm not a person who likes to go to a lot of the kids' shows and the fantastic, you know, whatevers that are. But I love the idea. I mean, I loved it as a child. I loved the Hulk when it was on TV.
Right.
Because I love the idea of that you, too, could conquer evil. But no. I think there's a place for it. I'm just really pleased to see that the audience is growing and that people like the Exotic Marigold Hotel. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was fabulous. And also I noticed that there was an article about it, and you guys have mentioned this too, that there is more of an audience for these films out there. But it's incumbent upon us as moviegoers to get out there and see them and take the risks and
right.
spend
Pam,
the money.
As long as we've got you on the line, I do want to bring Justin back in because the Exotic Marigold Hotel was a title that he actually was talking about earlier.
Okay.
Right, Pam, there was an article in the New York Times specifically about how that movie engaged an older audience and an older demographic, and that there is disposable income in that demographic to come out to the movies. It's one of the reasons why at Standees we're geared toward that 40-plus age group, but we're also hip enough and appealing enough for 21-plus, and that growth you talked about is spot on. You know, between 1995 and 2010, that 40-plus age group has increased 34%. And that's three times faster than the under 40 demographic. So there is a market.
Right. And also, we're living a lot longer. And older people love going to the movies.
That's a good point.
I work with a cross-section of the elderly, including myself. And, you know, the thing, I'm in my late 60s, and I love a good story. Everybody wants the character-driven stories. And the superheroes, well, some of us like that. But the thing is that we want to go, and we want to reflect on our lives.
Yeah, thanks so much, Pam.
I'm just so glad that we haven't been forgotten. Thank you.
Appreciate your call. Thanks so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Sonia from Gladstone wants to chime in. Hi, Sonia.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I had to rack my brains. At first, I was thinking about Spike Lee, She's Got to Have It. But one of my favorites is Slumdog Millionaire.
There you go.
That's absolutely fantastic. The music, the storyline. I'm not really crazy about American movies, but they're so plastic. They're so full of special effects. But Slumdog Millionaire touched your heart.
I agree. That's a great choice. Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
And based on a book.
That's right.
Yeah.
Before we run out of time, we do have a few other titles that we want to get to. But please go ahead and give us a call at 816-235-2888, and we'll do our best to get your calls in. One of the big blockbusters opening today, Monsters University.
Yeah, right. This is Pixar's first prequel to the classic Monsters Incorporated from 2001, and it goes back to Mike and Sully's years in college as they major in scaring. And it's just as clever and immersive as we've come to expect from the people in Pixar. They're great at creating these fully realized worlds. And this is a nice familiar world. So, you know, it's back to that comfort zone of something we've seen before. But and it's not, you know, it's not top tier Pixar, but even bottom tier Pixar is better than most of what passes for family entertainment out there. So I enjoyed it very much. It's very cute. It's very clever. It just is much fun as you come to expect from all this. So I'm going to give it a 4.
I'm right there with you. I'm giving it a 4 as well. I think that the only thing I would say is, yeah, you don't need to pop for the 3D. It's not that important.
No, it's not really that important.
Yeah, no. But the visuals are great. The humor is great. The voice work, terrific. Yeah, I'm giving it a 4 as well. So that's 4 for Monsters, Inc. rated G. The only G-rated movie that we can recommend today, unfortunately. But speaking of new and visuals, Tom, quickly, tell us about World War Z.
I can do this pretty quickly, and I'll have to. This is Brad Pitt as a United Nations investigator and is racing against time because an epidemic a la Contagion, Steven Soderbergh's film, has broken out. But here's the change. It meets up with George Romero's classic Night of the Living Dead because it's an epidemic where you get bitten and in 10 seconds you turn into a flesh-eating zombie. So Brad Pitt will travel the globe trying to find, in fact, some answer, but he's going to need to find the original patient zero. There was a lot of press about how this was a disastrous sort of production history. So I was really pleasantly surprised. I think it's really quite good. Brad Pitt saves the day with, I think, really solid acting. So I'm going to give it 3 stars.
Yeah, I'm pretty much on board with you on that. It's really well produced, and I think Brad Pitt is a terrific actor. As a matter of fact, I think he's one of our finest actors, and he really carries the day. So I'm going to give it 3 for World War Z, rated R. Or no, excuse me, it's rated PG-13. I take that back because they did excise some of that gore to make it more palatable to a wider audience. So World War Z, rated PG-13. Now, this is not an original idea, but it's certainly an original approach. Much Ado About Nothing, Joss Whedon's take on the Shakespeare classic.
Yeah, Joss Whedon likes to have his friends over to do Shakespeare readings, and they decided to film one in digital black and white at his house. And it's all modern dress, and mostly actors that he's worked with before, Alexis Denisov, Amy Acker, Clark Gregg, Nathan Fillion. It's very light. It's probably one of Shakespeare's more accessible plays, so it's easy to follow. You know, you never lose the sense that it's just a bunch of friends getting together, hanging out for the weekend. There's no real context to it, but all of these people turn out to be pretty good with the Shakespearean dialogue, and it's just a very, very entertaining version, and I think would appeal to a pretty broad audience who may not normally get into Shakespeare adaptations. So I'm giving it a 4.
Wow, 4 for Joss Whedon's Much Ado About Nothing, rated PG-13.
Can I just, because I know we're going to run out of time, Before Midnight is playing in Kansas City. Rick Letters, a collaboration with Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy. If you know that trilogy of Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, and now Before Midnight, boy, it's got a closing scene or that lasts probably 45 minutes maybe in a hotel room that is one of the most stunning 30 minutes of cinema I've ever experienced.
Wow.
I think this is one of the great trilogies in film history, and I'm giving it 5 stars.
Wow, yeah. Excellent. 5 stars for Before Midnight. That's rated R. And let's quickly also talk about The Bling Ring. Now, this is Sofia Coppola's latest effort. She has given us a somewhat original story based on a Variety Fair article about a true incident where a group of affluent teens from the Hollywood Hills area took it upon themselves to become more like their celebrity idols like Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan, and they did that by breaking into their homes and stealing their things. And they, over a period of just a little bit over a year, they wound up with over $2 million worth of booty from all of the celebrities. And it is kind of interesting and funny in that it really exploits the vacuous nature of teens and the kind of sad idol worship that and misplaced priorities that dominate their lives. Good cast, smart movie. Didn't work too well pace-wise, but I'm still going to give Bling Ring 3 out of 5 stars. I'm going to try to get a couple more quick calls in. Let's talk to Alexander from Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Alexander.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. You wanted to talk about a film?
Yeah. on the content of original ideas and movies that I can't remember what year it came out. I'm not really good at trivia or anything like that, but Donnie Darko was always one of my favorite original movies. When it came out, I was, 16, 17. It was quite a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always really fascinated with that concept that the movie presented and how well it was done. And just your guys' thoughts on that movie as well.
Outstanding.
It's a classic.
That's one that didn't do that well in theaters, but it grew this very big cult following on DVD, and that seems to be a template for a lot of these smaller films. That's where they find their audience and make their money.
Hey, thanks so much for the call. That's an excellent suggestion, Alexander.
Yeah, very much. Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. Let's go to Elizabeth in Prairie Village, and she wants to talk about the parents' role in all this. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi. Yeah, parents and grandparents' role. Just as we don't just let our kids read the Sweet Valley Cheerleaders books when they're in grade school, we expect them to read some better literature than that. We can also expose them to better film. I can remember when my son was about 10, I took him to see The Madness of King George, and he was fascinated by it, especially when King George was peeing blue. That was very interesting to him. But he looked around in the theater at some point and said, "Why isn't this theater full? Why aren't there many people here?" And I still see them as adults enjoying better films because they were exposed to them and they were exposed to subtitled foreign films. And if we don't expose them, then they think of film as just an eye candy experience.
I'd like to put in a plug here, the importance of like our public libraries and their film series and film series like the musical. It was thrilling to see how many parents and grandparents had brought children to those screenings. Good for them.
You are so right. I want to thank my fellow movie critics today, Tom Poe and Lois Lockerbie, and our special guest, Justin Scott, head of marketing for Standees. Thank you, Justin. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton with the help from Ross Steinmetz. Our announcer is Kim Noble. And on Monday morning, you can catch KC Currents and Central Standard returns next Tuesday with Nature in the City. Up to Date is next with a look at pirates, race cars, and Shakespeare. I'm Russ Simmons. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.